and he did not find any water. So whether istisqa means he was searching for water or he asked for water, this is a matter of dispute among the scholars. But the some of the following narrations tell us that no, practically speaking, Imam asked the enemy for water. In another narration we read, عطش الحسين عليه السلام, Imam became very thirsty, فدعا بقدح من ماء. Here we have فدعا, which means he asked for a glass of water. إن الحسين استسقى ماء حين قتل فمنع من وقتل وهو عطشان. Imam al-Hussein عليه السلام did istisqa before he becoming martyred, but they did not let him, and he was killed while he was thirsty. This sentence can be translated in two ways. Or for example, فقصده القوم, people tried to kill Imam al-Hussein عليه السلام وهو في ذلك يطلب شربة من الماء. Again, we have here searching for water or asking for water. Both of them can be possible. جعل الحسين يطلب الماء. Imam al-Hussein عليه السلام was searching for water or for asking for water, and Shem was saying that do not let him to reach water.
That's all right.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
And صاح الحسين بن علي اسقونا ماء. Now this sentence is very clear. So some of the previous sentences could be understood in two ways, that Imam searched for water or asked for water. But here the narration says Imam Hussein alayhi salam called out that isquna ma'an, give us some water. Farama rajulan bisahmin fashaqqa shatqa, then a man shot an arrow toward Imam Hussein alayhi salam, which caused him a wound on his holy body.
Even Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas was in search of the water.
Exactly.
And when got, for example, the water, and he was back, I mean, the bags of water were filled, he was martyred, you know, and his arms were cut off on the way back, you know.
Exactly.
When getting the water.
So there are some other narrations, because of the time of the program, I'm not able to share all the narrations. For me, it seems that, having studied all these narrations, it seems that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in few cases at least, or at least in one case, he asked the enemy for water. Mm-hmm. But is it against the dignity of the Imam?
Sorry, before getting to the dignity, because the family with the Imam, so it is something natural to ask for the water for the children.
Exactly.
Or something like that, okay?
Exactly. Of course, again, there is a dispute in case of Ali ibn al-Asghar.
Yes.
Because some people believe that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam took him before the enemy just to ask the enemy to give him water.
Water, that's right.
For this case, it seems that we do not have an authentic narration for this case. The narrations are there that the Imam took the baby that is called Ali ibn al-Asghar, according to some narrations. He was in the arms of the Imam Hussein alayhi salam, but it's not an authentic narration that in that case, in that occasion, Imam asked for water for that baby. It's not well authenticated.
That's right.
And of course, the rest of the story is true, that then an arrow was shot and Ali ibn al-Asghar was martyred.
Yes.
But whether Imam Hussein alayhi salam asked for water for that special case,
okay,
it is not according to an authentic narration.
That's all right.
But now,
is it against dignity of the Imam or
the
not?
The point is that no, it's not against the dignity of the Imam. At least there are three philosophies for that. Before going to these philosophies, I mean, as you rightly mentioned, at the end of the day, we are talking about human beings. I mean, mm-hmm. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because some people think that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was supernatural person, meaning that he didn't feel the thirst. No, Imam was suffering from that.
Yes.
All the companions, all the family members were suffering from that. otherwise there is no reward for that. So for sure, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was suffering, his family members were suffering, and it's very natural in this case to ask for water, yes, if this is not an act of showing humiliation.
Up to an extent they were thirsty. I think it is documented that Imam al-Hussein puts his ring on the tongue of Ali al-Akbar,
isn't it?
Yeah, to quench the thirst, exactly, of Ali al-Akbar, and says, father and son, you know, how thirsty you are, quench your thirst with the ring stone.
Exactly, a miracle done by the Imam, according to some narrations.
Yes.
So one, there's three philosophers. One point is that it is a kind of, completing the hujjah, the proof against the enemy.
Yes.
The point is that because some people later could say that, or on the Day of Judgment might say that Imam did not ask us for any help,
mm-hmm,
because the same question is asked, why did the Imam ask for help?
Yes.
We have it in many stations that the Imam asked some people to join his caravan. What was the reason? Is it against the dignity of the Imam? No. Imam wanted to complete the argument, because otherwise the people later could say that the Imam did not ask for any help or for water. Otherwise, we would have helped the Imam or would have given, yes, him water. So this is one point. The second point is that this is a kind of, this is an act of Imam to make the tragedy of Karbala an immortal event.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about this point, that this is a very special event in the whole history of mankind. And the fact that the Imam is asking for water, but he's not given any water, it, yes, is, one of the sad pages of the tragedy, yes, of Karbala.
Yes.
So this is another, might be another philosophy why Imam Hussein alayhi salam asked for water. And the third point, which is very considerable, is the fact that Imam alayhi salam is the manifestation of the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
There is no doubt about that. And we see and we read in the narrations that till the last moment of his life, Imam was thinking of the fate and destiny of the enemies too.
Yes.
And he was giving advice to the people.
Guiding the people to the right path. That's right.
So according to some scholars, one of the reasons for this istisqa was that maybe Imam alayhi salam found it a way to, yes, guide some people.
Yes.
When Imam is asking for water, at least it was likely for some people just, yes, to be touched, just to be touched, that, yes, this is the son of the Prophet. He is asking us for even water, and we are not giving him water.
To make them conscious of the...
Exactly. And that might be a way for some people to at least be away from the army of Umar ibn Sa'd, which,
right,
happened,
which happened,
I mean, practically,
right,
speaking. Yes, yes. Although not many people joined the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we have the case of Hur ibn Yazid al-Yahyi, yes, and few other people who joined the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam from the army of the enemy army. But we have other people who did not join the Imam, but they left the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. This,
okay,
is, according to the, yes, many historical reports. So the third philosophy that may think of is that at least we may think of it as a possible philosophy. Imam did that so that it might be, a way for some people to,
yes,
change their destiny, their fate, to join the Imam, or at least to,
yes,
be away from the army of the Umar ibn Sa'd.
And showing the true face of the enemy, I mean, the Yazid,
mm-hmm,
as the ruler. All Muslims, look who is the ruler of the Muslims, such deviated,
exactly,
people, who is, you know, that's all right. Really, really sad story. And these aspects of this story, the tragedy of Karbala has been reiterated and remembered to see that how the enemies of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad did cruelty and atrocity, not only towards him and his companions, but his family members, the women, and the children. Thank you, Omar Sheikh, for a nice elaboration regarding Istighasa. It was very kind of you. And thank you, Omar, dear listeners, for listening to us.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories says these attacks are illegal and irresponsible. The Israeli regime, however, says they are a preemptive act of self-defense against a Palestinian resistance movement called Islamic Jihad. The occupation forces say the bombardments could last a week, promising more deaths.
As the bodies pile high in the Gaza Strip, emergency protests like this are being held against the Zionist regime's latest onslaught. The pain and anguish is palpable, and with people who have loved ones braving the bombings right now, silence is just not an option.
Two Islamic Jihad commanders have reportedly been killed so far, as have dozens of men, women and children. Palestinians living outside the territories can only pray their loved ones are spared.
Yes, I have three of sisters and I have my mother in Gaza Strip. I'm trying all the time to contact with them, but they told me everything is bad in Gaza Strip. We just scared. The children is very scared, crying all the time.
They don't know if they will live until, like, you know, night or not. They say, if we respond to your call, then you know we are fine. If we don't respond, you have to be scared and you have to call, like, you know, our relative and see if something happened to us.
The West's handling of the Palestinian crisis, juxtaposed with the support Ukraine is getting, has thrown into stark relief the lack of political will on the part of Western governments to heal this decades-old wound.
The Palestinian problem has been going on for decades, and yet it isn't told about in the main press. Our governments do not support it, neither the Tory party or Keir Starmer or any of them, not even Ed Davey. Then none of them of the Liberal Party support what is going on. Why? Because it's more important to sell arms and to have some sort of democracy, they call it, in the Middle East. But what I think is happening is they're using Israel to create tension in the world.
Leave the Ukrainian with no armament whatsoever, because they need to give a gun to a Palestinian. He's a terrorist. But the Israelis can have all they like, and they are the victims.
The US has thrown its weight behind Israel, as has Britain. Both say Israel has a right to protect itself, but from what? More than 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza have no freedom of movement, sitting ducks for the Israeli occupation forces. In preparation for the attacks, Tel Aviv prevented fuel deliveries to the already impoverished enclave. As a result, hospitals that are only allowed 4 hours of electricity a day will soon be unable to cope. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Okay.
Scores of people were injured and many more were arrested after government forces attacked Muharram mourners in the Indian-controlled Kashmir's main city, Srinagar. Authorities had placed strict restrictions in the city and sealed the entry points with barbed wires to prevent Shia Muslims from participating in the traditional procession. On Saturday evening, authorities issued a statement upholding a ban on mourning processions in the city centre. Police and paramilitary forces were deployed in big numbers to maintain order. Mobile internet services were suspended in parts of Srinagar. However, some mourners defied restrictions and poured onto the streets at many places to mourn the martyrdom of Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein. The government forces swung into action and hit people with canes. A number of mourners were also detained. 3 decades on, the authorities continue to prevent Shia Muslims from holding traditional Muharram procession in the region's city center, citing security reasons. The people here argue if the government can allow Hindu processions and political rallies in the heart of the city, why not Muharram procession?
See, on one hand, we see the whole security mechanism, you know, they get activated when Hindu pilgrimages are granted permissions and security arrangements are being made. But on the other hand, we see when, you know, something related to Muslims is there, they don't grant permissions. We don't want security at the first place. We want permission so that we could carry out our religious activities.
Very recently, ruling BJP party held a political rally in the city center. If authorities can ensure security for that rally, why are our peaceful mourning processions banned? Why this discrimination?
2 major Muharram processions in the city center were banned by authorities following the outbreak of militancy in Kashmir in 1989. The authorities fear the processions could be taken advantage of by separatist groups to stoke anti-India sentiments and hence create security threats. The religious bodies, on the other hand, termed the ban as a brazen attack on their religious freedom.
It is very unfortunate that the authorities are selectively banning religious activities of the majority population here, shutting down mosques and banning processions, even as authorities claim the situation is improving in Kashmir. These days, annual Hindu pilgrimage is underway in Kashmir and all sorts of arrangements are being made to facilitate that. We strongly condemn discriminatory behavior of the government and hope that the good sense will prevail.
The religious bodies have also criticized the authorities for failing to make necessary arrangements, like ensuring availability of essential supplies. They say all promises and claims made by the authorities have fallen flat. Sayyidi Safi, Indian administered Kashmir.
With her trip to Taiwan this week, Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi set off a firestorm in offending China. From the self-governing territory, Pelosi criticized Beijing and its leadership, while carefully outlining the limitations of the U.S. commitment to defend the island.
In the Congress, House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans are committed to the security of Taiwan in order to have Taiwan be able most effectively defend themselves. But it also is about our shared values of democracy and freedom and how Taiwan has been an example to the world in that regard.
China had warned the U.S. and Pelosi against the visit, as it views Taiwan as a breakaway province that will one day rejoin a one China. In response to Pelosi's Taiwan visit, China's People's Liberation Army on Thursday began the largest military exercises targeting Taiwan in decades.
Tension in the situation across the Taiwan Strait is solely caused by the U.S. side. The root cause is Pelosi's selfish and willful interference with Taiwan, which seriously violates the One China principle. The Chinese government has the right to take all necessary and justified actions to firmly safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity.
In South Korea, Pelosi met with the Speaker of the National Assembly. Seoul has been careful to balance its U.S. military alliance and relations with its largest trading partner, China. Pelosi spoke with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol on the phone, but the two did not meet, an outcome widely viewed as a snub of the third-ranked U.S. official. House Speaker Pelosi later stopped in Japan, where she met with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. China later Friday announced sanctions against Pelosi and the suspension on several issues of cooperation with the United States. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Britain is on the brink of a recession, as deep as the 90s and as long as the 2008 financial crisis, a bleak projection by the country's central bank. The Bank of England says it's trying to stem skyrocketing prices by raising interest rates by half a point to 1.75%, saying the measure couldn't come soon enough.
If we don't bring inflation back to target, bearing in mind the huge scale of the energy shock we're seeing, if we don't bring it back to target, and if we get these so-called second-round effects entering in, it's going to get worse.
It was news that sent a chill among the public, people already feeling the squeeze on their finances.
Living out of my home and all the bills on, I have to pay it by myself. I'm on minimum wages as a cleaner. And, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do anyway.
The salary is still the same and the prices are going up, far too up. That's the reason what I have a concern about is.
The Bank of England predicts the economy is going to shrink, with recession starting this year and lasting all the way through the next. That plus the biggest decline in living standards on record and another sharp rise in household energy bills. The bank pins the eye-watering energy price hike largely on rising gas prices owing to the war in Ukraine. But there are other reasons.
It's a whole plethora of reasons coming together. So you can actually look at the effect of the pandemic, what that impacted on manufacturing and consumerability, global trade and supply chains, and the underlying cost of rising commodities, food and other areas. So this is a Gordian knot of elements coming together. Now, untie that knot, and that's what they're going to have trouble doing.
The writing had already been on the wall. Many experts did warn the UK was behind the curve in dealing with rising inflation. Britons are going to see their energy, fuel, and food bills increase significantly over the next year. Charities are warning of a catastrophe this winter. There's talk of creating warm spaces to provide heated sites for those unable to afford their energy bills.
This deluge of bad economic news comes as the country awaits a new prime minister, and that is a month away. But whoever they may be, their job has just become way harder. Cyprus is up London.
The Israeli regime has sealed its crossings with the Gaza Strip since Tuesday, further exacerbating the humanitarian situation in the impoverished territory. Currently, there are two Israeli-controlled crossings into the tiny coastal territory, the Kerem Shalom commercial crossing, located on the southernmost tip of the Gaza Strip, and the Erez pedestrian crossing in northern Gaza. The crossings have been partially operating since Israel imposed a tight blockade on Gaza in 2007.
The Israel closure of the crossings for the third day has serious, severe implications on the lives of the Palestinians in Gaza Strip. We are calling on the international community for immediate actions to pressure Israel to lift the blockade in Gaza.
The impoverished coastal territory already suffers from high poverty and unemployment rates. Most Gazans also depend on handouts from international aid agencies to survive.
Closing the crossing point from the Israeli occupation, it's a collective punishment. It's part of blackmail against Palestinian people. Over 2 million people living in Gaza, they are living in the huge jail. The social and economic situation so deteriorated.
For 15 years, the Israeli regime has kept an illegal and inhumane closure on the Gaza Strip, affecting the lives of more than 2 million Palestinians and restricting their freedom of movement.
Gaza crisis, due to the Israeli continuous blockade for 15 years, suffering from serious implications on the economy, on the humanitarian conditions, the employment, food insecurity, poverty, increased to unprecedented percentages.
Tel Aviv's move to shut down the crossings will further complicate living conditions in the impoverished territory. According to human rights groups, the Israeli blockade has wreaked havoc on the economy of Gaza and worsened its humanitarian conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
French President Emmanuel Macron has reached the 100-day mark of his second term, and the contrast with the bold newcomer of 2017 couldn't be more different. Macron is being described as distant, burnt out, weary, and hesitant, but the adjective he may like the least is powerless. 2 months into his new mandate, Macron experienced his worst failure as a politician. His young political party failed to win a parliamentary majority. A president used to ignoring the legislative branch so far hasn't shown much political skill or interest in the tough work of cobbling together successful majorities to get his policies approved. Many believe Macron may call for new elections as early as this year or rule even more often by executive decree. Both options are sure to create major opposition in a new parliament as well as social unrest.
Since the legislative elections, France is in a new political era dominated by uncertainty. Macron has been acting as if he can easily find a majority in Parliament on a bill-by-bill basis, but I think that has very little chance to work. It's very likely that in less than a year he'll dissolve Parliament and call for new legislative elections.
Polls show that, unlike most winners of presidential elections, Macron has not benefited from the usual honeymoon or grace period. Just like in 2017, Macron was mainly elected to block the far right. But he's no longer a political unknown without a track record. Instead, he's a polarizing figure who has been tarnished worldwide by his authoritarian repression of the Yellow Vest protest movement, and who is perceived domestically as wanting very different things than the average person. Economic stagnation is already upon the Eurozone, and depression could be next. Political stagnation appears to have taken root in France, with perhaps even a depressed president. 100 days into Macron's second term, it's a summer of silent discontent in France, with possibly explosive autumn unrest looming. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Black-clad mourners beating on their chests and listening to elegies in honor of a man who lived 14 centuries ago but continues to touch the hearts of Muslims. Mass processions are underway in Iran to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia imam, Imam Hussein. Iranians from all walks of life have been participating in the ceremonies to pay respect to their imam.
The love of Ashura's philosophy should be gathered and extended around the world. I believe that because it's not just a love for Muslims or for specifically Shias, I believe it's a love that everyone can learn and everyone can understand, because it's not just a matter of your religion, it's a matter of a man that sacrificed everything in his path for his beliefs.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Imam Hussein was a true freedom seeker who stood against the unjust and corrupt ruler of his time, Yazid. We as Muslims remember him every year to safeguard what our Imam stood for.
Imam Hussein was the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Based on Islamic references, the Shia Imam and 72 of his companions were killed in the lunar month of Muharram in 680 AD in modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala by the forces of the second Umayyad Caliph Yazid. The asymmetrical battle was triggered after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for he believed that the Caliph did not exercise true Islam as taught by the Prophet.
The philosophy of Imam Hussein's uprising was to expose the corruption that was entrenched in the ruling system. It was only after Yazid's troops spilled the blood of Imam Hussein when people realized Yazid's animosity toward Islam. And that set the start of the collapse of the Umayyad dynasty.
People believe Imam Hussein's sacrifices saved Islam from distortion and manipulation by Yazid. And this is just one reason why his love hasn't died down in the hearts of Muslims after 14 centuries.
Shia Muslims never miss out on the 10-day mourning ceremonies for Imam Hussein. They say these rituals are meant to keep Imam Hussein's flag aloft and preserve his legacy for the generations to come. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Pakistan! Imran!
Hundreds of supporters and lawmakers of the Pakistani Tehreek-e-Insaf party has filled the streets of the capital Islamabad in a show of support for the ousted premier Imran Khan. They marched in Islamabad's red zone to protest the recent verdict issued by the country's electoral body that declared Khan's party has received illegal funds from foreign individuals and entities.
The charged protesters are not only demanding that Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and his cabinet step down, but also warning the United States to stay away from Pakistan's internal affairs.
The demonstrators criticized the role of Washington in Pakistan's politics, saying they are seeking independent foreign policy in Pakistan.
What they are doing to us with the drone attacks, the army men who are killed in our country, they just went for the, you know, the relief work, and after that, the plane was crashed. It is just, I would say, they're intervening in our country.
With the USA, some black sheep from Pakistan, they were also involved into all this procedure. That's why the real hero of Pakistan, Imran Khan, has to resign from his office. And now the question is why? Because Imran Khan, he said absolutely not to all their illegal and to all their unfair demands.
While addressing the protesters, Khan underlined that a fresh election is the only way to get rid of what he called the puppet regime.
The U.S. staged a scripted drama for their own benefit in Pakistan, like to Pakistan and its foreign policy. So fresh elections are the only solution to get rid of this government.
On the other hand, the Pakistani government has filed a disqualification reference in Election Commission against Imran Khan. The government demands that the electoral body impose a lifetime ban on former premier as well as his political party. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iran's defense ministry has held an exhibition on its capabilities in knowledge-based production and economy. The event covers such fields as transportation, health and medical equipment, security, energy, information and communication technology, cyberspace, construction and mining, industry, petrochemicals, food security and agriculture, as well as household appliances, electronic parts and geographic data and information. In general, 1,100 products in various fields have been put on display at the exhibition.
The ministry's management team has been cooperating with more than 6,000 knowledge-based companies. The localization of products, expanding in-depth knowledge and technology, and creating synergy among the relevant institutions are on the ministry's agenda. The Defense Ministry is responsible for empowering and upgrading Iran's defense industry capabilities while using its knowledge to contribute to production of non-military products.
Iran has repeatedly voiced its readiness to provide advanced scientific and military technologies to friendly and neighboring states. Because it has already achieved self-sufficiency and scientific capabilities in the field of military power and manufacturing state-of-the-art, weaponry.
Holding such exhibitions will provide an opportunity to learn more about the potential and capacities of the private, knowledge-based companies and make use of their potentials for defense-related productions.
Meanwhile, Iran's defense minister has announced that in the coming days, his ministry would unveil a series of new defensive achievements.
According to Iranian officials, as a result of cooperation between Iran's defense ministry and knowledge-based companies, the capacity of the ministry for production has increased by over 20 times in the past couple of years. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
Dr. Luke Kemp, a climate scientist at the University of Cambridge's Centre for the Study of Existential Risk, says there are plenty of reasons to believe climate change could become catastrophic, even at most modest levels of warming. Dr. Luke Kemp added, climate change has played a role in every mass extinction event. It has helped fell empires and shaped history. We now present you an article written by Damien Carrington. The piece is titled Climate Endgame, Risk of Human Extinction Dangerously Underexplored. Climate scientists have warned in an analysis the risk of global societal collapse or human extinction has been dangerously underexplored. They call such a catastrophe the climate endgame. They said, though, it had a small chance of occurring given the uncertainties in future emissions and the climate system, cataclysmic scenarios could not be ruled out. The scientists said, facing a future of accelerating climate change while blind to worst-case scenarios is naive risk management at best and fatally foolish at worst, adding that there were ample reasons to suspect global heating could result in an apocalyptic disaster. The international team of experts argue the world needs to start preparing for the possibility of the climate endgame. They said analysing the mechanisms for these extreme consequences could help galvanise action, improve resilience, and inform policy. The researchers said explorations in the 1980s of the nuclear winter that would follow a nuclear war spurred public concern and disarmament efforts. The analysis proposes a research agenda, including what they call the four horsemen of the climate endgame: famine, extreme weather, war, and disease. They also called for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, to produce a special report on the issue. They said the IPCC report on the impacts of just 1.5 degrees Celsius of heating drove a groundswell of public concern. Dr. Luke Kemp at the University of Cambridge's Centre for the Study of Existential Risk, who led the analysis, says there are plenty of reasons to believe climate change could become catastrophic, even at modest levels of warming. Climate change has played a role in every mass extinction event. It has helped fell empires and shaped history. Dr. Luke Kemp added, past disasters are not limited to the direct impacts of high temperatures, such as extreme weather events. Knock-on effects such as financial crises, conflict and new disease outbreaks could trigger other calamities. The analysis is published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and was reviewed by a dozen scientists. It argues that the consequences of global heating beyond 3 degrees Celsius have been under-examined, with few quantitative estimates of the total impacts. Dr. Luke Kemp said, "We know least about the scenarios that matter most." The scientist said, "A thorough risk assessment would consider how risks spread, interacted and amplified, but had not been attempted." They said, "Yet this is how risk unfolds in the real world. For example, a cyclone destroys electrical infrastructure, leaving a population vulnerable to an ensuing deadly heat wave. The COVID pandemic underlined the need to examine rare but high-impact global risks. Particularly concerning are tipping points where a small rise in global temperature results in a big change in the climate, such as huge carbon emissions from an Amazon rainforest suffering major droughts and fires." They said tipping points could trigger others in a cascade, and some remained little studied, such as an abrupt loss of stratocumulus cloud decks that could cause an additional 8 degrees Celsius of global warming. The researchers warned that climate breakdown could exacerbate or trigger other catastrophic risks, such as international wars or infectious disease pandemics, and worsen existing vulnerabilities, such as poverty, crop failures, and lack of water. The analysis suggests superpowers may one day fight over geoengineering plans to reflect sunlight or the right to emit carbon. The scientists said there is a striking overlap between currently vulnerable states and future areas of extreme warming. If current political fragility does not improve significantly in the coming decades, then a belt of instability with potentially serious ramifications could occur. There were further good reasons to be concerned about the potential of a global climate catastrophe. The scientists said, "There are warnings from history. Climate change has played a role in the collapse or transformation of numerous previous societies and in each of the 5 mass extinction events in Earth's history." New modelling in the analysis shows that extreme heat, defined as an annual average temperature of more than 29 degrees Celsius, could affect 2 billion people by 2070 if carbon emissions continued. Qi Hu at Nanjing University in China, who was part of the team, said such temperatures currently affect around 30 million people in the Sahara and in the Gulf Coast, adding, by 2070, these temperatures and the social and political consequences will directly affect 2 nuclear powers and 7 maximum containment laboratories housing the most dangerous pathogens. There is serious potential for disastrous knock-on effects. The current trend of greenhouse gas emissions would cause a rise of 2.1 degrees Celsius to 3.9 degrees Celsius by 2100. But if existing pledges of action are fully implemented, the range would be 1.9 degrees to 3 degrees Celsius. Achieving all long-term targets set to date would mean 1.7 degrees Celsius to 2.6 degrees Celsius of warming. The scientists said even these optimistic assumptions lead to dangerous Earth system trajectories. They said temperatures more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels had not been sustained on Earth for more than 2.6 million years, far before the rise of human civilization, which had risen in a narrow climatic envelope over the past 10,000 years. Professor John Rockström at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany says, "The more we learn about how our planet functions, the greater the reason for concern. We increasingly understand that our planet is a more sophisticated and fragile organism. We must do the maths of disaster in order to avoid it."
Start. Movement. Speak. Live in hope. Toward the peak. On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, my very dear sisters and brothers from all around the world, welcome to another episode of Youth Station. Here we are once more. This is Asma. And with me, I have my very dear friend Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you, Zainab?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So, dear listeners, today we're going to talk about the thing which is very much common between all the human beings, which
and
is
crying.
Are you a crying person, Zainab?
Well, what if I tell you we are always constantly in a state of crying? First, we have to understand what is that. Like tears.
Mm-hmm.
Our eyes are producing tears constantly.
That's salty water.
Yeah, that's, I guess, some half a teaspoon in a day. Our eyes produce that. And yes, as you rightly said, it's just water. Most of it is water, but it has some percent of salt. It has some percent of chemicals.
And so much of emotions.
Not always.
Most of the time.
I'll tell you where.
But so you have done a research upon tears.
I have read this topic so much because, you know, when Muharram comes in and we see these tearful eyes, tearful people, and then coming out from those gatherings as a least distressed person, it has compelled me to go for a research for a number of times. So I have, yes, definitely done a lot of...
We're going to make use of whatever you have gone through then.
Yes. So I was saying, first of all, we have tears.
Yeah.
Tears are, most of the percent is water, and then some percent is salt, and some percent are chemicals, and there are some enzymes which are there to protect you from germs.
Yeah,
so you constantly have tears in your eyes because of the tear glands, and you produce some half a teaspoon of tears in a day just to keep your eyes, you know, you have
The water that keeps your eyeballs healthy.
And interestingly, Asma, it's not just water. When I was just researching on this for some long time ago, I found that it's not just water. It's some percent of oil as well.
Yes, yes, I've been through that as well.
To keep that, you know,
and
moistness.
And it was very interesting.
Yeah.
Oil.
Otherwise, your eyes will dry up.
Yeah.
The tears will evaporate.
So there's a poem that says, "Tears, idle tears, I know not what they mean. Tears from the depth of some divine despair that gathers in the heart and rises to the eyes."
Wow.
So that is what I know about tears.
Oh, well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Now these are the normal tears we always
but
have.
But mostly the kind of tears that we as human beings are facing are just these kind of idle tears.
Yeah, which flow from your eyes.
Yes, and they are full of emotions.
You know, we basically have a drainage system for the flowing of tears.
Yeah.
And that's through nose. You might have experienced.
Yeah.
When you're crying, you have a running nose.
Yeah.
Because that's the actual draining system.
Let's put that physical part aside and come to the point that why do we cry?
We cry because of... You mean to say why do we have this overflow of tears that comes out of our eyes?
Yeah.
We have that because of
why suddenly
situations.
You sit in a place and you remember something sad or something very happy, and then suddenly you feel like your eyes are getting watery.
You put it there, you know. You said, why do we cry? We cry at some situations. Mm-hmm. Either you're very sad.
Yeah.
Or you're very happy.
You're very happy.
Or some dust has just entered your eyes.
Yeah.
Or you're cutting onions.
Yes.
So, well, the most of the thing that we deal with is the sad and emotional tears. That's what we see most of the times. I mean, we never say like we are always in a state of crying.
Yeah.
And when you're emotional, you kind of per minute release some half a cup of water, half a cup of tears from your eyes. But when you're emotional, hundreds of research have been done which say that the chemicals released with these emotional and sad tears were quite different than the normal tears.
Yeah. Allah, Allah, Subhanallah, Allah, Allah,
walhamdulillah, Allah, Allah. This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Allah, Allah, walhamdulillah, ya Allah. You can listen to us at parstoday.com/en. If you have any suggestion, our email is englishradio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, you were listening to Youth Station. We were talking about crying and do not cry upon trivial things. Tears help you, even if they are
because you're releasing stress.
Yeah.
The chemicals that you release right now were the stress hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, 90% of this is the stress hormones, especially when you're emotional. And where do we see that, Asma? We see that in these gatherings of Muharram.
Yeah, that is very true, yes.
And that's why I think we feel that.
And they are the sort of very special teardrops because, as just you mentioned it earlier, when you come out of those morning sessions, you do not feel like you're depressed or you have cried your eyes out. It just feels like you feel lighter.
Because you have drained out all the stress hormones out of your body.
And I guess that is because those tears are very special and they have rewards behind them.
Yeah. As you need to excrete extra salt, extra water from your body through sweating and other excretory processes, you need to excrete the stress out of your body.
Do we have idle tears, Zainab? Tears that have got no values in them?
Yes, crocodile tears. We do have. That's something related to your brain. Like you signal your brain something. Your heart signals your brain something. You start crying over very non-serious things or like maybe to please someone or to show off and all. That's why they are called.
And sometimes over something very trivial or very little, you cry. That's why we have been recommended in our narrations to whenever we feel crying, we must cry for the sorrows of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. Because those tears are going to be rewarded.
Yeah.
And they are valuable tears. They're not just idle tears. You sit in a corner and you do that. You cry your eyes out and there's nothing out of it.
You basically are going to extinguish the hellfire with those 3 years. That's true.
So, okay, guys. So we come to this point that tears are necessary. These are the part of our living thing. So as we are living beings, we have to cry, and it happens most of the times. But sometimes crying for worldly things, for trivial things, is not the rightest thing to do. Yes, it do release the emotion that you have, but you should consider that these tears must have a value. So whenever you're going to cry, as we have been recommended, we have to cry for something valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah, just as I told you.
Yeah.
There was a scholar who used to cry in those morning sessions for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So he asked his family to keep that handkerchief that he used to dry out his tears in order to be the witness of whatever he has done in this world, whatever teardrops he have gathered in that handkerchief, in order to witness for
because
him.
He knew that those tears were valuable.
Yeah, and those tears are going to be the witness in the world to come.
Yes, because on that day when we will be shocked, we will be in a state of shock. We won't be able to talk.
Yeah,
everything around us will be
and
talking.
And also we should consider
the earth
that
will be witness, our
these
tears will
teardrops be are very special. Just as I told you, we have narrations that says how valuable these tears are. We do think that these tears are not just something worldly, just a salty water that comes out of your eyes. These tears contain so much of words inside of them.
Yeah, you know, actually, a believer is wise. It's in Quran. A believer is always wise, choosy, clever. So whenever like you as a female are cooking something at home, you make so many efforts into it.
Yeah.
But with just one intention, you can change that mubah thing, that something that had no value, that was neutral, into a recommended thing, into a mustahab and recommended thing, with just changing the intention while you're cooking.
Like, so it's all about intentions.
It's all about intentions. Like when you're even like, as you said, you are feeling depressed,
mm-hmm.
you want to cry, just cry in the name of Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah.
Be wise. Turn this idle thing into a recommended mustahab.
So we shouldn't
thing.
Let these teardrops
as
be a
believer,
sign of weakness.
You have to be wise.
These,
you have to be wise in every yeah. state of your life. You have
yeah.
you can change just level of mm-hmm. your actions from neutral level to a recommended level. Just with the change of intention.
Exactly, yeah. So these cries are not the sign of weakness. These are actually the sign of strength and power. And one day these are going to be helping us.
Witness.
Yeah, as the witness they would come
And not
to
just
help.
These tears.
Yeah.
The earth, the place, the country you were staying in.
Every single thing you have touched.
It will speak on that day
yeah.
that this person at this particular time was staying on me,
mm-hmm.
walking on me, and that time he was crying for Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah.
So what better than this?
Exactly.
That, and we are in need of such kind of witness on that day.
Of course, yeah. Instead of crying, as I told you, instead of crying for our miseries,
yeah.
we cry for a greater cause that is going to stand for us someday.
Yes.
Nobody can tell you, do not cry. It's a permission that God has given you to release your emotions through the channels of your eyes and to cry your eyes out how much you like. But try to do it upon something that is so much
wisely.
Great, yeah. And do it in a way that is going to be a witness for you. And someday these tears would talk for you.
Yeah.
And they would be a help for you. So also, Zainab, we already know about the energy that everything contains, right?
Yeah.
Even those teardrops might have special energies.
They do have.
We talked about it already. It was about the intention.
Yeah. Professor Emoto, a Japanese researcher, did a research on water.
Yeah.
And he would call water with different names, and he did tremendous research. And then he would find that whatever he would say, the water would attain shapes, the
yeah.
same shapes. You know, water, even if you put physically water in some vessel, it again attains the same shape.
Yeah.
In the same way, human body, more than 70% of it contains of water. So when you're draining that out emotionally, it is attaining shapes.
Yeah.
It is attaining those beautiful spiritual shapes. Rather than draining your energy, it is providing you energy.
Yeah.
But when it's emotional.
So what you actually are trying to say is that the intention that you have would give those teardrops a sort of a special energies, and they would take different shapes.
Yeah.
So the shape of those tears would be different, of course, when you cry for something that has got a great cause.
Yeah.
Than when you are doing that for a special thing, for something that you didn't get or achieve. So, dear listeners, since we are in the month of Muharram, whenever you have that gathered tears in your eyes, please, please do not forget us from your prayers. And I hope you had enjoyed this session. Thank you for listening. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
About you. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.